The views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have. Told you turn the other cheek and they made it with a bat. Fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war. Vietnam, you died, good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And now was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. The one that you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
For those of you who don't know,
good afternoon. You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. from the state of North Carolina. Today's date is January 7th, 2016. I hope that my voice finds you in relatively safety behind these enemy lines, because it is a war zone out there. The whole globe is a battlefield. We do have a couple of stories that I would like to share with you today, but as always, you are more than welcome to call in and report your news. Also want to remind you, I noticed that somebody submitted a news story to us last night. There is a section on blacktalkradionetwork.com that says submit your news to Black Talk Radio. I haven't had a chance to review that news story. I'm assuming a listener sent it in. I will take a look at that later today, but I do appreciate people sharing news and tips with me on this program, because, you know, there are so many things going on around the world, and they are important things, important information, and, you know, one person can't gather all the intelligence that needs to be gathered, because, again, the whole entire planet is a battlefield. So I do appreciate those people who send me stories or make me aware of certain information that they would like to bring to the attention of our listening audience, as well as those who frequent our website and read the blogs and whatnot. The telephone number, if you would like to make any comments about any other stories today, or if you have any news to report or any commentary you like to offer, give us a call, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. Again, that's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-POUND. You can either choose to just listen, as many people do, and at any time you would like to speak, hit star 6 and 1 to comment on air. There's also the web-based flash phone. Want to give a shout-out while it's on my mind to our listeners in Uganda. I forget the name of the little city and whatnot, but, you know, we have gotten messages and emails of some of our listeners in Africa who just wanted to say hello and wish us a new happy new year and whatnot. So we do indeed have a global audience. That is the advantage that digital radio has over terrestrial radio, which is limited by the reach of the antenna. Okay, and yeah, they can go pretty far. You can catch stations that may be two or three states over, but digital radio is global, and that's why I feel like it is imperative that the black diaspora, the African diaspora, utilizes this technology to connect with each other. And with that said, we do have the web-based flash phone where you can make a free call over the web using a voice over IP. Just click on the button that says call the show. Enter in the telephone numbers or choose the appropriate telephone number that I gave. Enter in the access code and that gets you in. And of course, you can always hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. The final way to get in is to give us a call at the studio line. This studio line, 704-951-5030. That's 704-951-5030. And then there's also our Skype handle, which is Black Talk Radio Network. Now, here are some of the news stories that I would like to share with you today. I wrote an article late last night. Man, I was up to like 6 o'clock this morning. I mean, wow, I did not mean to stay up that late. But when I seen that story come out, I looked at several different articles and, you know, I gleaned the information and I wrote my own article because, you know, a lot of these news websites, they be practicing deception. Some of them be practicing racism. If they're a non-white person, they may be practicing proxy racism. And so, and when it comes to news articles, I like to share the facts. I also like to choose headlines that more accurately describe what's going on or what went down and whatnot. And so, I wrote an article last night about the thug cop that arrested Sandra Bland being indicted. So I want to talk about that today, but I want to talk about it I want to look at it from another angle. Max Parthas, a member of the Black Talk Radio Network family, co-host, co-producer of New Abolitionist Radio, which aired last night on this network, but he said something about grand juries. And we know in Sandra Bland's case that there were special prosecutors, and I said that in plural because there was more than one. It wasn't just one, but there were special prosecutors that were appointed to look into that and seek indictments. But because it was a secret grand jury, we don't even know, well, what kind of charges were they seeking? So Max had brought up the fact last night that in Europe, and I know when I say Europe, that encompasses a whole bunch of different nations, but most of them are part of the European Union, and they kind of pretty much have the same judicial system. It may be, you know, a little difference, but Max has said that in Europe, they don't even have grand juries, that they secret grand juries, they abolished them. Well, they don't have grand juries, period, let alone secret grand juries, and they abolished those several decades ago. So I did a little research as I was thinking about Sandra Bland and asking the questions about what sort of charges were special prosecutors seeking indictments on and what evidence was presented that this secret grand jury did not find enough probable cause to issue an indictment. And of course, again, this information, I'm sure a lot of people would like to know. And because of the secrecy of grand juries here in the United States, you know, that just doesn't inspire confidence in the system. Now, we've had a couple of prosecutors try to play like they was making things transparent. You know, the prosecutor in Ferguson, St. Louis County, I think that was, I'm not sure of the county, but in Ferguson, the killing of Michael Brown by Darren Wilson, former cop who's now retired, living a life of luxury for murdering a little young black man. And so him, and then I think it was another case where in Cleveland, Tamir Rice case, where they're pretending like, you know, they're seeking transparency and everything's above board and we don't have nothing to hide. But we know that they manipulated the proceedings and turned them into a mini trial that presented evidence not to indict them on criminal charges, but to clear them of any criminal charges. And so, you know, they manipulated the way it's supposed to work. And so I think that grand juries are and when they're secret, so if we know that's going on and we got a window into how certain prosecutors misuse the process to get killer cops off or other people off, then, you know, just think about what we're not seeing. This is probably widespread in the system. It's probably widespread. So I'm asking a question to you, the listener. I already made up my mind, but I think it is time to abolish secret grand juries in the United States in the name of transparency. I don't think even jurors should get to hide behind secrecy and be presented evidence that you know, a logical thinking person would say, hey, that's enough right there to issue an indictment and get this person a trial on the criminal charges and whatnot. And so because they're anonymous, you know, they practice, it just makes it that much easier for them to practice racism or to be a tool of the racist system, as in proxy racists. So that's one of the stories. We'll talk about what this thug cop was indicted on. We'll get into the details of that. Now, over the past couple of days this week, I've been talking about the group of armed protesters in Oregon. Some of them don't even live there in the state. They are from Texas and whatnot. And I've talked about, you know, some of the foolishness that they are engaged in, especially with their deceptive language and trying to act like, you know, they're doing this for everybody. And that's a doggone lie. But the Harney County Sheriff, his name is David Ward. That federal building is on in his jurisdiction. But also, you know, the feds got jurisdiction all over the country, so they involved in it too. But he said, and we'll take a listen to that interview. Interview he gave said that those involved will face charges. Now, over the past 2 days, I've seen videos on social media giving two different perspectives. And I want to share the audio of those videos with you. One from a white male perspective, suspected racist. He says he's not a racist. He doesn't come out and say he's not a racist, but, you know, that is seems to be what he wants people to think, that he's not a racist and whatnot. So we want to take a listen to his perspective. He says some interesting things. Want to break them down. Also from a Hawaiian man who lives in Oregon. He gave his perspective. And I do follow the Kingdom of Hawaii. I'm not sure if that's the exact name of their Facebook page, but they shared that. And he had an interesting perspective from a historical standpoint. So he also, you know, just to show that the system based on the false belief that white people are superior treats non-white people all over the planet the same way, the same way. So we want to take a listen from this non-white Hawaiian man living in Oregon. We want to take a listen to his perspective as well. All right. So now, it has been difficult. It's been a while since I talked about this case. A listener did share some information with me, and I'm going to have to find that information. I believe I was sent Tremaine Wilburn's address at the jail. And I'm going to be honest with you, I lost track of that email. I can probably do a search in my email on his name. I might be able to find it. But I have reached out to his sister, but I have not heard back from him. So for those that don't know who Tremaine Wilburn is, if you don't remember that name, he is the man who is set to stand trial in Memphis, Tennessee for the killing of Memphis cop Sean Bolton. Tremaine Wilburn is a black man. Sean Bolton is a white man. And there was a recent development in the case that it really doesn't have to do with the case, but directly, but indirectly, it has to do with the case. And so you got this person that's on the Memphis City Council, and, you know, there's very little information about it. I can only find one article, but apparently one of the city council members has introduced some ordinance or whatever they call it, a law, ordinance, proposal, whatever. But he wants to name a street after the dead cop, Sean Bolton. Now, again, Wilburn has pled not guilty. He maintains that he was acting in self-defense and was in fear for his life when he said Bolton started manhandling him, even though he was complying with the cop's commands. And I remember reporting on that about how he said, you know, the cop was telling him to do this, to put his hands behind his back, and then, but I can't remember. But it was very confusing. He was giving the man conflicting commands while manhandling him to make it, I guess, seem like from Tremaine Wilburn's perspective that, hey, this dude trying to set me up and trying to say I was resisting and you know, he's going to kill me. And so he should be in fear for his life. Again, 2015, we don't have all the numbers because all the police departments are not required. Not only police departments, sheriff departments, all law enforcement are not required to report how many homicides their officers are committing. So we don't even have an accurate count. But the highest body count that's, you know, you got several different databases. Well, really only two. The counted, which is maintained by the UK-based publication, The Guardian news outlet. The Guardian has one. And then, you know, you got some anonymous citizens who have been maintaining the database called killedbypolice.net. And they have the highest body count total, and it is over, I think it was right at 1,200. Okay, 1,200 people in 2015 were killed. And based on some of the information that came out of The Guardian and some other research I was doing, hundreds of them were unarmed and didn't even have, you know, weapons on them. But again, they are not, all the law enforcement agencies in the United States are not required to report. And so it could be, freak, it could be 2,400 people. It could be double that. It could be triple that. It could be quadruple. We don't know. Because the data is not being kept by all these police departments, and the federal government ain't really trying to force them to do nothing. The only law that was passed, if you want to call it a law, I wouldn't call it a law, because in the 1990s during the Clinton administration, I think he had a Republican Congress, they passed a piece of legislation he signed into law that recommended that they keep count. See, that's why I tell people, man, and not just me, but other people say, words are important. Just like we point out the 13th Amendment exception clause. It says except. That word except has a meaning. It has a definition. Do you know what the definition of except is? Because if you know what the definition of except is, you wouldn't be saying slavery was abolished in 1865 by the 13th Amendment. All right. So if you pass a law and it says recommend, well, that's not the same definition as require. The two different words with two different meanings. And so those words have an impact on the meaning of the law by using certain, and that is the, like, you know, person I've been connected to through social media. Never met her in real life. We talked over the phone though, off air and whatnot, and we talked through social media. She lives in Ghana. She's from Memphis. I think she is from Memphis before she moved to Ghana, but she's back here in the States now. She's an attorney and whatnot, but, you know, she was talking about, you know, white people and their words and the words they use. And you know, that's the number one way that people, not just white people, but people, period, practice deception is through words. And so, you know, Mr. Wilburn had a legitimate reason to be in fear for his life in interacting with this cop who he says was giving him conflicting orders and was manhandling him. So I want to talk about the possible ramifications of this Memphis City Council wanting to name a street after the dead cop. Because to me, that's not practicing justice. That's practicing deception. And I'll talk about why that is practicing deception. So those are some of the stories that I will share with you. Once we get through these stories, you know, well, anytime you can call in if you want to comment on something, because, you know, I'm not the most intelligent person in the world, and sometimes I miss things or I'm not looking at it from your perspective, and you might have a perspective that enlightens everyone. So, you know, I'll encourage people to share their perspectives. Don't be shy. All right. Now, so let's go ahead and again get into our first story. So as I wrote last night, Waller County, and this is in Texas, of course, grand jury has issued an indictment in the Sandra Bland case, but the indictment of this thug cop, and yes, I'm using that word appropriately, because if you are going to threaten a woman or anyone, it shouldn't be just a woman, but it's especially egregious when a man mistreats a woman and threatens her and pulling out your taser and forcing her to get out under the threat of being tased. All because she wouldn't put out a cigarette in her vehicle, okay? And so, yes, he's a thug. That's thug behavior. So that's why I call him a thug. These other people want to call him trooper. They want to call him police officer. They want to call him whatever, except for what he is, and that's a thug. So anyway, we know from the video that trooper, as they call it, thug trooper, Brian and Cena, that whole incident that I just described to you was caught on film. It was caught on his dash cam. We had also had audio so we could hear what was being said. And so when he was questioned about it by investigators and possibly the special prosecutors, and he might have been, from what I was reading, they said that, you know, it was a probable cause statement about the stop. So that could mean that he wrote a filled out a police report on why he arrested Sandra Bland. And he lied in that report. I don't know for sure, because they call it a probable cause statement. So I'm thinking that's just a police report of me writing down the circumstances on why I arrested this person, what laws were, do I believe, was violated, and I had probable cause to arrest this person. And so he lied about it in his statement, and it didn't match what we saw, and apparently the secret grand jury saw. And so he's been indicted for that, and I guess they're, you know, I'm kind of confused, because they're saying that he's being charged with perjury. Perjury carries a criminal penalty of 1 year in jail, up to 1 year in jail. I imagine a judge might have some discretion, because it is a misdemeanor. It's not a felony. So no mandatory minimums involved and whatnot. But he could be sentenced to up to 1 year in prison and given a $4,000 fine. Now, here is the issue that I have with the secret grand jury, as I said in my opening monologue. First of all, the coroner or the medical examiner, whatever they call them down there in Texas, ruled the jailhouse death of Sandra Bland as a suicide, not a homicide. A homicide means that, you know, somebody caused your death. Somebody's at fault. Suicide means I took my own life. All right. In police or law enforcement lingo, they call things justifiable homicide and negligent homicide, or just homicide. But that's what homicide means. The definition of homicide means you did not die from natural causes. Somebody caused your death. Now, that leads me to ask the question, well, what criminal charges were these special prosecutors seeking from this secret grand jury? What were they trying to get an indictment on? When we hear, you know, reports coming out that the secret grand jury did not indict anyone in the death of Sandra Bland, then why would a prosecutor be seeking? I mean, what possible criminal charges could he, because again, The only reason a prosecutor should be going to a grand jury in the first place, if they were practicing justice, is to seek an indictment so that they can charge somebody and give them a trial and try to convince a jury to convict them. So we don't even know if they presented any evidence that showed that Sandra Bland did not kill herself and that it was a homicide. We don't know. And maybe, you know, they weren't seeking first-degree murder charges. Maybe they ain't had evidence for that. Maybe they're saying it was a negligent homicide or a manslaughter because, you know, the jail wasn't supposed to have plastic bags in there. You know, big, tall, plastic bags that, you know, I've been in jail. I've been arrested and put in jail a number of times throughout my life. Never been to prison, though. And just minor stuff, fighting when I was in the military, fighting people and you know, just you know, stuff. And so every time I've been in the jail, I've been in the jail in Arizona. I've been in a jail in Gaston County, North Carolina. I've been in a jail in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. And they always take your belts. They take any jewelry that you have. They take your shoestring. Well, in Gaston County, you get flip-flops. They take your shoes. Why do they do this? So you don't hang yourself. So you don't commit suicide. And then they're, you know, investigated and, you know, somebody loses their job because they didn't follow proper procedure or whatnot. So I don't even know if that is what the special prosecutors or prosecutors, because it was more than one, if they were trying to say that some jailhouse rules were violated and you know, it was negligent to put this woman in a cell or any other prisoners that they had in a cell with the means to hang themselves. So, I mean, you know how prosecutors can get creative with charges and whatnot. But see, we're left to speculate. And I hate to use that word because I listened to a black conservative yesterday on a radio program of one of our media partners on Tanya Free and Friends. And we were talking about different cases and whatnot. And he kept saying, you're speculating, you're speculating, you're speculating. Well, dude, just because, well, like, we supposed to wait on them to finish their investigation and then accept what they said as facts. When we know these people lie and they cover up crimes, as we saw in Chicago. So he just kept saying people speculate. Well, you know what? When we don't have a transparent system, when we know people are corrupt and they lie, that's all we are left to do is speculate. That's what prosecutors do in front of grand juries. They speculate on why it was a crime, why you should indict this person, why you should issue an indictment on a probable cause warrant, had them arrested, and then, you know, set them up for trial. You speculate absent the facts. And right now, we're absent the facts. We're absent the fact of, we know Sandra Bland's dead. We know that there was a trash bag in there that they're saying she hung herself with. I don't know. Was they trying to say, you know, that they had a partition in there that blocked the cameras? And why would you even have that in there? You should, you know, everything should be in full view of the cameras in these jails and whatnot. Every jail I was in, you know, in Arizona and North Carolina, I'm in full view of the cameras. We had in Gaston County, they got a camera in every cell. So we're left to speculate because of the secrecy of grand juries. And like Max said yesterday on New Abolitionist Radio, that we need to abolish grand juries, period. And he mentioned that Europe got rid of grand juries decades ago. Because they don't work. They don't bring about justice. And we see here in the United States how that is being used to manipulate the system to have a favorable outcome for killer cops or whoever. that the prosecutor empathizes with and wants to try to get off. And so, but, you know, a prosecutor, and this has been said concerning a Tamir Rice case, but you're not even supposed to be going to a grand jury unless you believe a crime has been committed. So what crimes were they seeking indictments on in Waller County, Texas? And they're not telling us. I haven't seen anybody. Maybe, again, I can't presume to know everything on every case. That's why I solicit information from the listeners, from the people I'm connected to on social media. That's why I follow certain social media accounts, because I know, you know, they're going to share some good information and not just a bunch of booty pics and nonsense like that. But, you know, I do believe that that is something that should be part of, quote unquote, any kind of reform. But like Johanan is the one, he's the other co-host and co-producer of New Abolitionist Radio. He is the one that said, you know, you can't reform slavery, you have to abolish it. And we need to abolish grand juries, period. Not just secret grand juries. And a related story in California, they just passed a law that gives prosecutors the power to just charge these cops, to bypass the grand jury. And some people were hailing that as a victory. Well, that only depends on if you got a prosecutor that believes in practicing justice, because they can choose not to charge them. So I want to take a listen to this report that I found online, this audio report involving grand juries in Europe and why they were abolished. I haven't listened to it in its totality yet. I have read the transcript, so it'll be my first time listening to them, though. And so we'll go ahead and share that information, because I think, you know, time after time, we keep seeing the grand juries don't work. They don't work. And if we want transparency so that we can identify who's practicing justice and who's practicing injustice, then, you know, this should not be secret. Especially since taxpayers are funding this. We, the public, are funding the entire proceedings. I want to know. And I'm sure people in Waller County, they have expressed themselves. They want to know what happened at this grand jury proceeding that all you were able to come up with was an indictment for this man committing perjury. This thug committing perjury. Oh, by the way, he was fired because he violated department procedures in his arrest of Sandra Bland. So I'm going to take a station identification break, and then we'll come back. We'll jump right into this report on Europe and grand juries. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I broadcast every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday live at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time right here on Black Talk Radio Network.
This is Brother Elliot, host of Time for an Awakening, and you're listening to Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennium.
As we've mentioned, the Eric Garner case and Michael Brown's in Ferguson both ended up before grand juries. In each case, a group of our fellow citizens made the decision not to indict. Most of us don't really get grand juries. The concept comes from our colonial forebears in England, but the United Kingdom actually abolished its grand jury system back in 1933. So why do we in the U.S. still have them? I asked Joshua Rosenberg, a writer based in London, for some historical background.
The concept of the grand jury goes back centuries here in England. In medieval times, it was drawn from the local neighborhood, and these were men who were expected to look around and report criminal behavior within the community. They're people who actually knew the offenders, as we'd call them today, and knew who they were, knew what they were doing, and could perhaps help bring them to justice. By the 16th century, it had become more like the body that it is now in the United States, a group of people who listen to prosecution evidence and decide whether a case has been made out. Now, we kept something similar until quite recently, but we abolished the grand jury in 1933, as you say. We now send cases that are serious enough straight to jury trial, and so the evidence is presented to the jury. The defense, of course, present their side of the case, and the jury decides.
What is your biggest complaint about the use of a grand jury today in 2014?
The real problem is that they are said to be putty in the hands of the prosecutor. In other words, the prosecutor can really tell them what he or she wants, and they will go along with it. Or that's what we are told. Of course, we don't really know, because we can't watch grand juries at work. But the famous New York judge, Sol Wackler, said in 1985 that district attorneys have so much influence, they could get grand juries to indict a ham sandwich. And of course, it must be even easier to get a sandwich acquitted, if that's what the district attorney may actually want.
Right, so that quote in mind, what does that suggest to you about these non-indictments, these famous non-indictments now in Ferguson and in New York City?
Well, you see, if the prosecutor presents in evidence that may be inconsistent, then it leaves the grand jury in a very difficult position. The problem is inconsistent evidence. You might get some witnesses who say they saw Darren Wilson, the police officer, shoot Michael Brown, and that he wasn't resisting arrest. Then, of course, you hear Darren Wilson himself, and you hear what he says. And no doubt other officers supported his claim that he was acting in self-defense. So this was really what we...
I want to pause it there, y'all. Bear with me, because I have to do that. Sometimes I forget stuff and whatnot. But I also just want to make a quick note and bring to your attention that there was a white suspected racist woman who wasn't even there, and the prosecutor allowed her to testify that she saw it and knew she was lying, and said that, you know, Michael Brown did this and that, was charging at him, and, you know, whatever she lied about saying. And then they knew that this woman wasn't even there. And then, so she lied to a grand jury, do you think she was charged with perjury? That's what they're talking about, where prosecutors manipulate the process, all right? And I would also note, not only am I concerned about it because of killer cops in various cases where, you know, the system, the prosecutor manipulates the grand jury by confusing them, and I mean, again, all they're supposed to do is present the evidence that shows that this person probably committed this crime, and not any conflicting evidence that show, well, maybe they didn't. That's not the purpose of the prosecutor's office. That's what prosecutor means: prosecute criminals. And so if a prosecutor doesn't believe a person committed a crime, why would he even take it to a grand jury? And so let me continue. But I'm also concerned about how grand juries are used to manipulated to indict people who are innocent. And so they could be presenting them evidence that is totally made up, fabricated, which they often do. We talked about some of that, Annie Dukin and the drug, people who do the drug testing for the cops and whatnot, and pressure was put on them to falsify. And there's also financial incentives to falsify the results of whether or not a substance is a drug or not. And so it could be used to set up innocent people. We need transparency. These grand juries should be abolished. Just make it simple. Why complicate things? Do just like England is doing, or the UK, and just present the evidence to a jury, and the defense gets their, you know, opportunity to put up a defense. So let's continue.
Really, what we would regard as a trial, but a trial behind closed doors.
So if the Eric Garner case had happened today in the UK without a grand jury, walk us through how his case might have proceeded.
After any crime, there is a police investigation. And the police work closely with Crown prosecutors, the equivalent of district attorneys in your system. And the police gather evidence, and the prosecutors may say, well, you really need a little bit more evidence in this area, or you need to speak to that witness. And eventually, the police and prosecutors working together put together a case. During this time, the defendant may well be in custody, or may well be on bail, or maybe the defendant may not have even been tracked down at that stage. If there is enough evidence in the view of the prosecutor to charge a defendant, then the defendant is charged. He makes a brief formal public appearance immediately before a court, a magistrate's court. He is then sent for trial before what we call a crown court, in other words, a trial court where we have a jury of 12 people. But we don't have any grand jury proceedings. We don't have any committal proceedings, as we call them. We simply gather the evidence, make sure the defendant knows what the case against him is, and put the evidence to a trial in front of a jury of 12 people.
So the grand jury system, I mean, it must benefit someone. Why is it still operating in the U.S., do you think?
I don't really know why it does still remain in the United States. You know, why have this secret procedure in a country that is so keen on open justice and televising courts and jurors giving interviews after trials? Why not have everything out in the open and let both sides say openly in a public forum to an ordinary jury what their arguments are, and then let an ordinary jury decide? Obviously, they meet in private, but they decide in public, and then we all know where we stand, and we've all heard the evidence.
Yeah, a lot of people here are asking the same question. Joshua Rosenberg, thanks very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And that was a report from Public Radio International, which is a global nonprofit media company focused on the intersection of journalism and engagement to affect positive change in people's lives. Sort of what Black Talk Media Project tries to do, as well as elevate the voices of the Black community and view things from our perspective. Even though we all ain't in a box, we don't all think the same, and you can't put us all in a box, but anyway, and you'll have very differences of opinions on our network, so anyway, he's convinced me. They've convinced me. What is the purpose of a secret grand jury? What is the purpose? And I don't want to get into studying the history of it here in the United States and why they brought it about. It don't work. It is used as a tool to subvert justice, okay? Whether that is to indict innocent people or whether that is to allow guilty people to walk away. And I don't see how anybody can present a logical argument that says that, to me, that we need secret grand juries. Why? If you are, you know, some people might say, well, we need to protect the identities of the jurors. Why? Why do we need to protect their identities? So in case they, you know, practice injustice, whether that's racism or some other kind of bias, you know, so we don't want to, you know, make their names public. Look, when a jury is in an open court, that's on an actual trial that, you know, is either going to convict somebody or, you know, acquit somebody. They ain't secret. They in the public. Everybody can see them and whatnot. So that argument don't fly. You being paid, which jurors are paid a stipend or whatever they're paid to sit on the jury. Well, that makes them employees of mine in this county. They're my employee. I want to know who these people are. Because, see, I may know them, especially in, you know, a small rural area like I live in. I may know them, and I might know they are Confederate flag-waving white supremacists. I want to know if they sitting on grand juries and practicing racism. I want to know. Don't I have a right to know as a taxpayer who I'm paying to practice justice? And if they practicing injustice, I want to know. Let's go ahead and take this call from area code 267. Thank you for chiming in. Go ahead and speak your piece.
Hey, good afternoon, Scotty. Brother Ralph calling from up north.
Greetings, Brother Ralph.
Hey, man, I'm glad you brought up the topic about the grand juries, because I've always called them, I guess since 2005, I've always called them the grand dragon. When there's something going on that's racial, the grand jury normally sides with the oppressor. I mean, every time. And like you said, we don't even know if there's such a thing. We don't know if there's jurors or whatever. Now, in Ferguson, they had some blacks that was on that grand jury that exposed that white woman. You know what I mean? And the secret was out. But what I'm trying, and the thing that really bothers me, Scotty, and this is the God's honest truth, man. They're talking about an investigation that's going to go on in Chicago right now about that whole situation with Daquan McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was the Department of Justice did an investigation in Ferguson where they showed that black people were being unfairly ticketed to keep the budget up. They had incidents. They wrote different reports. They showed everything. Yet
they beat people in the jail. They were beating people. They in that Ferguson report, Brother Ralph, I don't know if you had a chance to review it, but it also said that there were criminal code violations of federal law.
Right. Yet nobody got arrested, Scotty. So, you know, I don't care if the Department of Justice is going to go in Chicago and investigate all these people that they know there was a huge cover-up, because almost it's like, once they write their report, it's a smack in your face like, yep, here it is. But nobody gets arrested. Nobody gets punished. Nobody gets fined. So this is the same thing that goes, it's like a lot of, yeah, we like to see certain things go on, but we want justice. That's not justice,
that's
man, showing us that injustice. You know, that's not, you know, these grand dragons, you know, which I call the grand jury, because that's all they are. They can put anybody on that jury and keep it a secret and get these Klansmen with these badges and guns out, off. So, you know, it's really pathetic seeing the same thing over and over again and expect the results to be different.
Right.
I'm not insane. I see it clearly. I see it as clear as the nose on my face when I look in the mirror what kind of system this is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I see people getting all excited. Oh, they're going to investigate in Chicago. Loretta Lynch and Barack Obama, and I'm glad I listened to the one program, because in that Rodney King case, I believe it was George Bush's Department of Justice Attorney General that started that case against Stacey Coon and the rest of those criminals.
You're talking about George Bush, the father. You're talking about his father, H.W.
Right, the first George Bush,
mm-hmm.
and then it was Bill Clinton. They seen that it was rotten from the core, because they seen the video of Stacey Coon and the rest of those criminals beating the hell out of Rodney King. They couldn't let this go, so the Department of Justice moved in and brought civil rights violations against those cops.
Mm-hmm.
What prevents this thing in the White House from doing that?
Right.
What prevents them?
Nothing. The lack of will.
There you go. That's what I'm... So he sees the same injustice that me and you are looking at. Yet we got people that still want to celebrate this clown. And yeah, he did. He did. I give him credit. He did bring the economy back. You know, because while George Bush was in there stirring up everything under the sun, him and Cheney at Halliburton, that this country was in ruins.
But he just rewarded criminals, though.
Yeah.
I ain't going to give him no credit for that, to prop up a system that is only propped up by your ability to go around the world and kill a bunch of people and steal resources and prop up the petrodollar.
Right.
So he rewarded criminals. And where was the prosecution of those criminals that almost brought the global economy down? I don't give him no credit, bro.
Well, you know what? And I can't blame you. I shouldn't either. And just like those criminals that are out there in Oregon that took over the federal building, where's the prosecution for them?
Well, that'll be our next story.
Well, I mean, you know, where's the where are the drones at to bomb them guys? Mm-hmm. Or just shoot them down in the street? Mm-hmm. They're rewarding these clowns. So that show, see, I wish our people can get their minds out of their behinds, man, and look at what's really going on here. I mean, just look at it. And once you look at it and get your emotions slightly out the way, you can deal with it a little bit better. But long as we're looking for justice to come from an unjust system, you're never going to get it, brother. You're never going to get it. And there was something else that I wanted to talk to you about. It skips my mind. Oh, yeah. They're putting up all over the news about Tamir Rice's mother coming at LeBron James. Yeah. LeBron James plays basketball. If you want to come at somebody, go at that mayor, that police chief, and the attorney general.
Let me share that story right quick. I'll touch upon it. It didn't make today's program notes, but I had bookmarked it. I read it late last night on a sports site. Now, what she exactly said was that she is not calling for LeBron James to sit out games. Her exact words was, "I know his kids got to eat just like, you know, my kids got to eat and whatnot." So she's not calling for him to sit out any games that she think that goes too far. But what she's asking him to do is, she did criticize him and say that she was disappointed. Well, that's her exact words. She said she was disappointed. His answer about he doesn't know that much about the case. And she said that we know in the past that you have had, you know, your little protest, demonstrations wearing the I Can't Breathe shirts and the Trayvon, the hoodies down there in Miami. So she says she knows that he's conscious and whatnot, and she's saying she's disappointed because she's thinking he's copping out when asked about it.
I'm disappointed in her.
Yeah.
Place the blame where it's got to be placed on that prosecutor, that mayor. Leave that man alone.
And all place those black people.
You know what I mean?
All those black people.
I'm getting sick of this. We're putting it on these athletes. Most of them are young boys. Don't know nothing about life. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them see it. And some of them, and you know, I'm glad some of them do speak up about it.
Right.
But we got to stop trying to drag each other down like crabs in a barrel and put the blame where the blame's at. It's that mayor, that prosecutor, and the attorney general that sees the same thing we're looking at.
And not just them.
We got to...
The Democratic Party, because that prosecutor's a Democrat. The black leaders mm-hmm. that backed that prosecutor endorsed him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he has a long history of practicing injustice and racism.
What about Al Sharpton going in Chicago and telling those black ministers to support Rahm Emanuel against that the Mexican guy? But yeah, he's backing up from that now. He's doing like the Michael Jackson moonwalk now.
Mm-hmm.
See, these guys are slick, man. Mm-hmm. These guys are slick. It's a disgrace. And I keep hearing people call up this program talking about, oh, I appreciate everything you do. His question, and I listened to that program to see how brainwashed our people are. His question today was, what happened to Black Talk Radio? Why is it, you know, why is it being watered down? I know he's an agent anyway. That's why I don't even call his program. But I could tell you why. Because the Democratic Party has taken over all Black Talk Radio and made the Democratic agenda black agenda.
Right.
That's why we got this gay rights movement and all this other stuff. And all this other stuff because the Democratic Party puts it there. They got these talking heads out there. And they tell you how racist the Republicans are and this is what we need to do. And that's what happens every time. That's what happens. We're like parrots. They put stuff in our mouths and we just repeat it without understanding that this is just filth.
Right.
So, you know, I just had to call you because the grand jury they need to do away with it, but they're not. They're an unjust system, so they're doing exactly what they have always done.
Well, you know what, Brother Ralph, I want to get your opinion on this. I was thinking about it the other day. You know, it's easy for people to sit back and say, oh, the white man this, the white man that, and of course, you know, and you see it the same way I see it. We got these proxy racists that's helping these white supremacists. You just talked about them. You know, the white supremacists in the Democratic Party. You know, yeah, it's racist in the Republican Party, but how you trying to act like ain't no racist in the Democratic Party? And so some of us are just willing to sell out for some future rewards or and whatnot. And but we, there are millions of us in this country. And I'm not just talking about black people, but I mean, you got 40 million black people. 40 million black people did whatever they needed to do to dismantle this system and replace it with a system of justice. They couldn't stop it. They don't even have a million soldiers. They don't even got a million cops. You know, we as black men and women, okay, black men and women, we trained and organized. We got one of the largest armies in the world. All right. Now, let's throw in any conscious non-black people. Okay.
Let me say something. We're prisoners of war.
We're behind enemy lines.
There has been war placed on us since we've been here. So,
but we keep accepting it, brother.
And so, you know, the POWs can't get together and build the military.
Well, yes, they can.
We're prisoner of war here, and we're prisoner of war over there in the motherland.
Well, they have.
And our minds are the biggest prisoners.
Well, if you put, since you put it that way, that our minds are preventing us from doing it. Because we were like, well, you know, they got all this and they got all that and blah, 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 blah. Man, quit making excuses. If this is so bad, if this is so terrible, then we need everybody who believes in a system of justice to get together with other people that also want to implement a system of justice. And let's do it. Let's just do it and let's stop making excuses.
Well, didn't Elijah Muhammad say that in 1965 that we need to separate and go our own way? Didn't Marcus Garvey say that? But we got these so-called people that said, no, we need to get his water because it's colder. We need to be with them. We need to love them no matter what. And when they do these injustices against us, we need to forgive them because they know not what they do. Come on, man. We got a lot of those leaders in front of us.
But see, I'm not just going to put it on black people, though, Brother Ralph. I'm not going to put it on just black people to do it. I'm going to also put it on anybody who would call themselves conscious, anti-racist, believe in justice. It's on everybody, man. It's on everybody. You know, I appreciate
it. It's on everybody, but see, you got a lot of people call themselves conscious that really aren't.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, obviously, you have a lot of people that call, you know, I heard this one guy, he's a Hebrew Israelite, but there was one thing I agree with what he said. He said, whoever designed this system did a job on us because our worth is nothing more than a piece of a tree that they processed, stamped on it, in God we trust, and gave it to us, and we believe that's our worth.
A dollar.
I said, man. When he said that, I said, you know what? I'm guilty of that. You know what I mean?
It's the program.
I went to the military to provide my family to get some of that tree bark.
I did too.
So I'm guilty. I'm guilty of it. So, but that's just, it is what it is, man.
But what happened is that in both your case and my case, somewhere along the way, we got deprogrammed.
Right.
And like I told my daughters, when they're talking about going in the Air Force, no, I don't want you going in the Air Force, and here's why. Here's what's really happening to females, and not just females, but the rampant rape that's happening against everybody in there. And so I was like, you know, I told them why. I got out reading Malcolm X's biography. At the time, I was in the Gulf War, and then I started seeing myself as a pawn on a chessboard, not fighting for freedom and liberty of Americans, but helping corporations
fighting
secure
for,
resources.
Fighting for Halliburton.
Exactly.
Fighting for Halliburton.
Exactly. So, all right, Brother Ralph. All right, Brother Ralph. I'm going to go ahead
pleasure,
and move
man.
On.
Thanks a lot, man.
All right, appreciate you. Okay, that was Brother Ralph, supporter, donor to Black Talk Media Project. Again, you know, he's exactly right, though, about that black radio piece. What happened to black talk radio? Well, white people own it. And not just white people, but suspected racists own it. You know, I heard somebody mention yesterday as they was being an apologist for Bill Cosby and talking about he was going to buy this. And now I don't want to even go into those theories. But the brother shared some information that I did not know. And the information that he shared was that NBC started a black division called NBC Black. It launched in January of 2015. And it's not anything that I would recommend to anyone. I went there. It's part of the overall website, and it just had a few stories, and they gave some black person a job, and they get the title the editor and all of that. But guess what? They got a boss. Okay? You're not going to get unfiltered black perspectives from corporations or platforms built by suspected racists and white people who want to maintain control of our minds. You're just not going to get that. That is one of the reasons why I created the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit, in 2008. What really made me create it was I was suspended from Blog Talk Radio, a white-owned right-wing platform. And yes, they made their political affiliations clear to me. I don't know if any of you other people were paying any attention. And when they suspended me, I was like, that means that he has control over my voice, my digital voice going out over these airwaves. That's not a good feeling when you could just take my voice away, you know. And granted, nobody was paying for Blog Talk Radio back then, but still it didn't feel good because that showed me that they had power over a certain people activity that I found highly viable and that I didn't ever want that to happen to me again. So I used my technical background to take apart their website, look at the source code, identify the underlying technology, and I built Black Talk Radio Network. The way it is today, it's not how it looked when it first started. I've gone through a lot of growth as I learned more things, but out of that experience was born Black Talk Radio Network. Then shortly after that, I saw Malcolm X do a video interview, and he said that, you know, the American news media controls the minds of the masses. There's his quote about it can make the guilty look innocent and the innocent look guilty, and that's power. And I knew that there was an assault on real black media. Okay, not only were we losing black terrestrial radio stations that were being bought up by they're the name of that. They're the largest one. They also own Rush Limbaugh, Clear Channel. They carry Rush Limbaugh's program and whatnot. Clear Channel. They're buying up all the black radio stations. That's why you're getting all this gangster rap that's programming children to be criminals, to engage in criminal self-destructive behavior. It's part of the programming. That's what happened to Black Talk Radio. And they are unfortunately far too many proxy racists who are willing to take a paycheck to promote somebody else's agenda. And that's just the plain fact of the matter. So that is why real, what we call, and people told me, this is real Black Talk Radio. Independent black media producers are on this platform, some on this station right here, some operating their own digital radio stations that they lease from our nonprofit. And so that is how Black Talk Radio was born, and we cannot undervalue the power of media. I mean, it just went off like a light bulb in my mind when Malcolm X talked about the power of the media. Then I started researching propaganda, advertisement, you know, just all the different forms of media, and it's all propaganda, because all propaganda is it comes in different forms, but it's expressing an ideological viewpoint. You got a view, you putting it out there, that's propaganda. If you put it in print, audio, visual, you're conveying ideals to people. Now, you know, propaganda has a negative connotation. But it, you know, strictly, it doesn't have to mean that it's negative. And I'm quite open about, I produce propaganda. Propaganda for black people, but I'm not lying to them. I'm not trying to manipulate them. I'm just trying to present my viewpoint, present what I perceive to be the facts and let other people make up their minds. So I'm glad he mentioned that. It's the programming. It's the programming through the media. That's what happened to Black Talk Radio. Because if Black Talk Radio was a major part of the civil rights movement, major part of the black liberation movement. And so, you know, you can't have black people having conversations over the radio and on television having real conversations about what ails us or trying to determine what the problem is, dissect the problem so we can come up with the proper solution. So that's what happened. That's what happened. All right, I want to move on. Let me take another station identification break. You got this sheriff that's in Oregon that is talking about these armed occupiers will face charges. And I'm going to let you listen to an interview that he gave. Let me identify the source. I should always give you the source. I have linked to it. The source seems to be another nonprofit media company, OPB. That's OregonPublicBroadcasting.org. That's what that is. They affiliated with public broadcasting. They get most of their funding from white people. And these white organizations like the Ford Foundation, the Arthur T. Viney Foundation, the Bill Gates and Melinda Gates Foundation. And, you know, it's a reason we don't apply for those grants. Because when you get hooked on that money, all right, when you get hooked on that money to pay your salary, to pay other people's salary, y'all dependent on them. And if the money dries up, then guess what? You out of business. And so they had, once they get you hooked, once they get you dependent, then, you know, they have agendas that they want you to champion on their airways. Cause it really is their airways that they paying for it. If they funding you, they owned you. All right. So anyway, we're going to listen to this interview. Harney County Sheriff, armed occupiers will face charges. And there's a number of different aspects we could look at this. And I'm going to share a couple of perspectives. One from a white male who I suspect is practicing racism. He could just be ignorant. I don't know. But then from a non-white Hawaiian man. And he made me kind of like want to go back to the islands, man, when I was there. That's how they talk, and I haven't heard people talk like that, except for whenever some of the relatives of my children are talking to my children, and I hear them accents and whatnot, and how they talk. But anyway, you're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind these enemy lines controlled by USA Inc. Going to take a station identification break, and we'll come back. We'll jump into that interview.
This is Ron Hayes with Hood News, and you're listening to the Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com. All right, let's cue up this video. The audio to this about 12-minute interview. I do need keeping watch of the time. I need to speed up. Tando Radio Show will be coming on today. I'll be talking about some important financial issues that's going on in the global market. So make sure y'all stay tuned for Tando Radio coming up at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time right here on Black Talk Radio Network. But let me go ahead and cue this audio up and take a listen to what this sheriff has to say about these armed occupiers of this federal building. Okay, the soundboard gave me an error. Let's try it again.
I'd like to start out with a written statement. So, because of community concerns about personal safety, I've asked for extra patrols in the area and, you know, personal safety for the community. Sheriff's patrol deputies from all over have stepped up to help, and we're grateful for the help from our fellow sheriffs. We're working with the FBI on this ongoing situation. The FBI is handling the criminal case occurring on the refuge, and the Bureau has assured me those at the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge will at some point face charges. This disruption to the community has been significant. Excuse me. Normal operations to community schools and governments have been suspended. This is having an economic impact on our community. Some businesses have shut down. If this goes on any longer, it will have an even greater impact on our tourism and local economy. We're currently working out of an admin office. This will not affect the schools. These militants that have taken over the refuge headquarters out there said that they would leave if the community wants them to. I'm here to ask that the community come to a community meeting on Wednesday at 4 p.m. at the fairgrounds, because I would like to talk directly to my citizens. The initial peaceful protest was lawful and part of that process. What is happening now is unlawful. They know what they're doing is unlawful. I've talked to them multiple times. I will not talk to them now. They know what I have to say, and I want them to leave. If you're considering joining these folks on the refuge, you're not welcome. And the community safety is our top priority. Please join me tomorrow at the fairgrounds to discuss the issue. So that's kind of what I wanted to get out there, and willing to answer questions on any of those points.
I'm good. Would you follow up? Could you ring back in, please? Sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. You talked about the concern you have for community safety. Have Bureau of Land Management or U.S. Fish and Wildlife employees been harassed or been followed?
This started for me several months ago. November 5th was the first time that these folks came and confronted me with the issues that they have with, I guess, government in this country and with the situation with the Hammonds, which is no longer the case. Those folks turned themselves in. They're men. They had integrity. They did what they knew was required of them by law, and I respect them for it. But there's been an outside element within our community that has gone out of their way at times to make some of our citizens feel uncomfortable, and I certainly believe that the aforementioned agencies, some of those folks have had issues.
Do you know about how many people work for the for those agencies here locally, for BLM and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Forest Service?
You know, I honestly don't have the numbers on that. To me, they're just members of the community, friends, neighbors. You know, these folks, we're a pretty unique community out here. We're a small town in rural America. You know your neighbors. You talk to them when you see them at the grocery store. These are not, regardless of who you work for, you're not some faceless entity, whether you're law enforcement, work for a federal agency or that. Your friends, neighbors, every one of those folks has a spouse that lives and works in our community. Their kids go to school with our kids. They play on sports teams together. They're just members of the community. As far as the numbers go, I couldn't tell you exactly how many folks I have in each one.
Yeah, I was just curious from a perspective of how many people in the community might have an extra level of feeling of insecurity or an extra level of need for safety.
Well, being a small community, anybody that works for those agencies, I would say, then probably is related to somebody. A lot of folks that work here, live and work in the community for those agencies, or some of them grew up in ranch families right here in the community, and some of them, you know, are They're related to people within the community, so it affects the whole community.
Okay. You know, we got started a little late, quite a bit late, so if I could get a little more, I'd appreciate that.
Can you give me an example of you mentioned this started way back in November. Can you give me an example of the kinds of intimidation or threats that people have experienced? In addition to the occupation of the refuge.
I think mostly what people have experienced on a discomfort level were people from outside of the area who have followed employees home, taken pictures of their houses, followed them around. I've experienced it through members of my own family. Friends of mine have experienced it. It's happened, and it's uncomfortable. That said, there's a difference between following someone around and making them feel uncomfortable and actively breaking the law.
Is it true that the occupiers got keys to the refuge or got keys to the headquarters complex and managed to get in using a set of keys that they found?
You know, I wasn't there when they occupied the building, so I don't have hard information on how they managed to get in.
You've said that you've talked to these guys, you've been clear with them that they're breaking the law, you've asked them to leave, and that you don't plan on talking to them again. I'm curious, have you talked to them since Ryan Bundy said they would leave if the community wanted them to?
No, I haven't spoken with them since then. The leading up to this incident between Ammon Bundy and some of these other folks involved out there, I've personally spoken with them for probably more than 8 hours in communication, of just verbally communicating with them. And they understand that what they're doing is unlawful, and it's time for them to wrap it up and leave. And I personally am looking for a peaceful resolution to this, and they know that because I've told them that from the moment they walked through my office doors in November. And this escalation has come through a course of decisions that they made, and regardless of what their feelings are about our nation and our government, there are appropriate channels for citizens to work through. And I believe that this has gone way out of bounds, and it's time for them to look at this like adults while there's time to work through it peacefully. And
so I've just got three more questions. I'm mindful of the time. We have heard rumors that either the electricity or the water to the headquarters complex is going to be shut off. Has that happened, and why or why not?
I haven't been out there, but folks I've talked to say that there's power on and the power's going. But that's really in the federal side of the house. Those folks need to work through that on their own. My concerns are with my community and the safety of our community and getting things back to normal for my citizens.
Can you tell me what role the FBI is playing in this?
The FBI is handling the situation out at the refuge. As far as the communities and our city streets and our highways and the safety of our citizens back in the community, that is being organized and worked through by myself and the other sheriff's agencies who have offered assistance.
So the occupiers are using the media to get their message out. And, you know, last night I watched Ammon Bundy doing an interview with a live satellite truck. They have very easy access to the press. And they use it to say things like, we want more people to come here and join our effort. Are you going to cut off their access to the media at some point?
I'm not going to tell the media what they can do, you know, at all. I would ask that the members of the media be responsible about. They have a job to do, but inflaming the situation or further attention, I think, is what these folks are seeking. And I think the more attention we give to them, the more rhetoric we're going to hear, or the longer this might draw out. And I would say that to members of my own community as well, that if you're giving them support in that, you're just prolonging the situation. I think if one person gives them a Snickers bar, they're going on national media and claiming that the community supports them.
How do you feel right now?
I feel very disappointed. I feel very disappointed. There's been some folks that came into our community, tried to play on the patriotism and love for country that the good citizens in Harney County have, because that's who we are. And I think they've lied to our folks. They've exploited a family that was going through a rough time already. And I think that these folks contributed to making the last 2 months with these folks' family very painful. And for that, I'm very disappointed. And but I feel positive that we're going to be able to work through this and find a peaceful resolution to it. That doesn't mean that there won't be consequences for the folks that are occupying those buildings. But it does mean that they have the opportunity right now to work towards a better solution and not face further charges.
Is there anything that you'd like to add that I haven't asked you about?
I can't think of anything. Thank you.
Thank you.
Black Talk Radio News, Scotty Reed in for this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So, you heard the sheriff of what is that name of that county, Harney County Sheriff David Ward. And I didn't hear him using any kind of language, calling them terrorists or anything like that. He said they're breaking the law. So if you're breaking the law, you know, they got a word for people who are lawbreakers, and they call them criminals and whatnot. And I did a program the other day. Let's just get straight to the point. First of all, the two men that are being sent back to prison, the reason they're being sent back to prison, look, they pled guilty to get lesser charges and to get some charges dropped, that they set an illegal fire to cover up the illegal slaughter of some deer on federal public lands. All right. They even had one of their relatives, a little teenager, they didn't say the name of the boy, who testified and said that they told him to drop these matches, and when the flames got out of hand and whatnot, they threatened, well, I ain't gonna say they threatened him, but they told him he better not tell nobody, not to say nothing. Okay, so we're talking about people who had a jury of their peers who were convicted based on evidence. They also agreed to plead guilty for charges being dropped. Now, here's the thing, though. The judge, the sentencing judge in this case, broke the law. One of them only got 3 months. The other one, I forgot how much he got, when federal mandatory minimums, which I'm against, said 5 years. But the law is the law, right? For all those people who won't talk about law-abiding citizens and whatnot, well, that's what the law says, that there's a 5-year minimum for a felony arson. You put firefighters' lives in danger. You even put your own family member in danger, as the little boy had to flee and run to a creek so he didn't get burned up by the flames. So their whole protest is illegitimate. And then they want to act like they doing this for everybody. No, they ain't. Clyde Bundy is a racist. We have his own words from when, you know, he was illegally allowing his cattle to graze on federal land without paying the fees that everybody else has to pay. Now, these two individuals in Oregon, from what I read, they were paying the fees. They were paying the necessary fees they needed for their livestock to graze on that land. But what they did not have is a permit to do a controlled burn, which got out of control. So they broke the law. They admitted to breaking the law. Now, Cotton Bundy is a racist. We got his own words that indict him as a racist. I don't care if he had a proxy racist, you know, showcase black person out there with him. But you know what? The federal government encouraged them to do this. They encouraged them because when they were pointing guns at law enforcement officers, we saw the pictures. We all saw the pictures of them pointing guns at law enforcement officers and whatnot with their sniper rifles and whatnot. Some of them even claimed that they were veterans, had military training, and none of, if I point a gun at a cop, I'm liable to get shot, okay? But I tell you what won't happen if I don't get shot is I won't be charged. I'm going to be charged. They didn't charge them with any kind of crime. They just moved on and act like it didn't happen. Like it didn't happen. So they emboldened these people, these Bundys, to leave Texas, go to another state, invade somebody else's community for their own agendas. So the whole protest is illegitimate. Now, anybody that's a regular listener to this program, why do I say I'm living behind enemy lines of USA Inc.? Because I know the government is corrupt. I know that many of the laws on the books are unjust. We talk about slavery was never abolished. The 13th Amendment has an exception clause, and this isn't mass incarceration. This is the continuation of slavery. We point you to the evidence. We even looked at Oregon on the program Tuesday. Had Max call in where we do on New Abolitionist Radio the America is Ferguson series where we show you from the statistical data how they're practicing racism. But we also don't just focus on black people that's being abused by the system, even though they're the most abused. We have brought you stories about white inmates, Hispanic inmates. You know, doesn't matter to us. They're being abused, being murdered on these prison plantations. We told you, we've talked about the predominantly white communities where they're preying upon the people with these tickets, just like in Ferguson. But it don't get a whole lot of mainstream news because they don't want people, white people, to know that they are being oppressed in the same fashion, just not to the same degree. So, you know, I know the government is corrupt. I don't need them to tell me that. I know all the murders that they have committed. The U.S. government, COINTELPRO, what they did to the Black Panther Party, who wasn't doing anything but exercising their Second Amendment rights, which caused, you know, these conservatives who idolized Ronald Reagan when he was governor to hell. They was anti-Second Amendment. They passed a law to prevent people from openly carrying guns because black people were doing it. Okay? So, let's just get that out the way. These are not some people out there fighting for justice or fighting for somebody who was wrongfully convicted. These people admitted to what they done. Unless they're going to say that they, you know, gave a false confession because they was being tortured, like the Chicago Police Department does to people. Holman Square, what they call, you know, a CIA black site run by the Chicago Police where they're taking people, not booking them in the regular, processing them in the regular fashion and torturing them, trying to get confessions out of them. But John Burge, we've talked about his case. We've even had some of his victims on the program. Now, they were torturing young people, old people, into confessing the crimes they didn't commit. So that's not the case here. That's not the case here. So this isn't some cause of injustice here that they will have you to believe. And they're not doing it for everyone. We showed you how Oregon is practicing slavery just like every other state in this country. We showed you. We tell you prison slave labor is used to process meat, beef, poultry, and fish. I'm sure these ranchers ain't raising no hell about prison slave labor. No, they not. So, but, you know, the people that's calling them terrorists and whatnot, you know, that I don't agree with that language. I wouldn't call them terrorists. I'm not the type of person to practice injustice just because somebody practices injustice against me. I'm about being truthful. I'm about being honest. No, I wouldn't classify them as terrorists. I just classify them as criminals. I mean, we could say that they were terrorists when they were pointing their guns at cops and whatnot, but then that's terrorists on terrorist violence there. You know, I don't really care. Let the terrorists kill each other. I don't give a damn. Because without these cops, we wouldn't have the world's largest prison slave labor force. So I don't have any sympathy for cops whatsoever. I have the only cops I have sympathy for are the ones who blow the whistle on the criminality that's going on in the police department, and then their so-called brothers in blue turn on them for snitching. These are criminal organizations enforcing unjust laws, unconstitutional laws, all for the intent of putting people into slavery. I don't see them being anything apart from the federal government, because they get funding from the federal government to target nonviolent drug users and whatnot. Trying to force your morality on grown-ass people because you don't want them smoking weed. In Oregon, Oregon tried to file a lawsuit against the neighboring states that had legalized cannabis. But see, they're making a whole lot of money. I think Max said their budget is something like $1.5 billion to enslave just 70,000 people. And for almost every person enslaved, they got an overseer. They still profiting off. Slavery is the pillar of their economy, not ranching or anything like that. But as far as these people are concerned, they won't talk about they being oppressed because they don't get what? What? You think you could just burn up public lands without a permit? Put people's lives in danger? You think you can just slaughter deer like that? I got deer every night about 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, a herd of deer that's in our backyard. I'm on a large piece of property, you know. Hell, I like venison. I like deer meat. If I wanted to, I could, like, you know, blind them with some headlights and slaughter every last single one of them. But you know what I'm saying? That's illegal. I'm not a lawbreaker. I'm not going to do that. That's what these people did. So these are not some innocents, and these ain't no doggone patriots, because a patriot would be standing up to the government about these mandatory minimums, putting people in prison for nonviolent, victimless, so-called drug crimes. I don't see them. They ain't talking about mandatory minimums. They saying, let these two free. They ain't saying, let everybody else free. Oh, just these two, because they ranchers like me. And while they haven't said it, I'm sure them being white like them has plenty to do with it. Because scientific studies have shown that most white people, not all, but most white people don't empathize with non-white people. They've been programmed that way to be racist. Some of it is conscious racism. Some of it is unconscious. They just doing what the programming tells them to do. But these people are not innocent. These are not political prisoners, like the hundreds of political prisoners rotting in jails today. Many of them former Black Panther Party members, who all they wanted was to be their communities to be free from police terrorism. People talk about black people need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Well, you know, we was doing just fine. We're doing okay. Feeding ourselves, all of that. Black Panther Party had free medical clinics, clothing people, teaching children how to read, giving people political education. But even today, most white people will call the Black Panther Party terrorists. Now, I ain't talking about the new Black Panther Party. I'm talking about the original Black Panther Party. But I am connected to the chapter of the new Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton Gun Club, in Texas. And when they were doing armed open carry patrols of their community, the media was calling them terrorists and criminals,
Hell, they just exercising their Second Amendment rights. They just standing up to state-sponsored terrorism. But what did all these white people do? Most of them. What did all the media do? Portray them as terrorists. I didn't hear any of the Bundys standing up for the New Black Panther Party in Houston's right to bear arms and to patrol their community and protect the community against police violence. Whether that cop is a black cop, Hispanic cop, white cop, don't matter. Don't matter. Injustice is injustice, no matter who's doing it. I ain't hear all these people talking about we need to all unite in the federal government and these police is abusing the people. No, you ain't hear all that. Let me share this story with you. This audio clip with you from a white male on Cop Block. We talked a little bit about this last night on New Abolitionist Radio. Won't you pay attention to what this guy said? This guy is saying we're going to hear two perspectives. We're going to hear it from this white man who I suspect is a racist. He could just be playing into the programming that he's telling everybody else not to play into. And he does admit that he suffers from the programming, but we're going to take a listen to his perspective. Then we're going to take a listen to this Hawaiian man who lives in Oregon now. Listen to both of those perspectives. But before I do that, let me take my station identification break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Black Talk Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. Now, let's go ahead and get this guy. He calls himself Outlaw Morgan. I'm sure that's not the name his mama gave him, but that's what he goes by on Facebook, Mr. Outlaw Morgan. Let's take a listen to what Mr. Morgan said in Cop Block. Cop Block, man, they're starting to show their true colors. You know, they want to act like they're against the police state and they're not racist. And, I mean, really, they do a good job. I ain't going to lie. They do a good job in sharing stories of police misconduct. They are libertarians. And y'all know libertarians' philosophy is the less government, the better. And in some cases, they're right. But they're showing some of their biases by, sharing this guy's video. And a lot of people who follow Cop Block show their displeasure with Cop Block by saying, why would you share this? Is this how y'all think too? So anyway, without further delay, here's Outlaw Morgan.
Got my Obi-Wan going strong, cuz. You know what really fucks with me, man, is how the liberal media words what they word.
Oh, by the way, if you're the type of person that's sensitive to cuss words, you're going to hear some cuss words in both of these clips that I'm going to play. So just want to give you fair warning.
Words what they word when they word it to you. For example, they say 150 armed militiamen took over a federal building. Oh, that sounds scary. Yeah, but it's not true. A, the building was unoccupied. B, it's a refuge. It's open to the public. C, it was more like 12 people, not 150. But without fail, the liberal media tells you that it's a standoff. They're armed. They're ready to fight the federal government. They're domestic terrorists. They use words like militia. You know, they rile you up to incite violence. And now you, the liberal, on the other end of your television, is all like, yeah, go get them. Go kill them. Go get those domestic terrorists. But they're not domestic terrorists. They're simply protesting. But let's talk about domestic terrorism. They haven't broken one window. They haven't set one fire. There's been no random act of violence. And there's no rioting. No looting. So when events like Baltimore, Ferguson, and Chicago occur, it's called peaceful protests when it's actually violence running amok. When white men actually stand up to the federal government, it's called domestic terrorism. Now when these things happen in these places that I mentioned before, the police are told to stand down while they have to witness their cities being destroyed. These gentlemen are not looking for a fight with the federal government. This is not a standoff. This is not Waco, Texas. This is simply a group of people who are tired of being bullied by the federal government, which the BLM claims they have no ties, but who pays them? So while you shout and condemn and encourage murder, I'm actually happy just to see somebody have the balls to stand up. And let's get one thing clear. These gentlemen are not walking around with AR-15 strapped to their chest. They don't have live grenades pinned to their vest. They're not looking for a war. They're looking for justice. Perhaps it's the same justice that you're looking for when you protest, riot, and loot in your cities to display your distrust for your police department. Perhaps the liberal media is playing us like pawns. They want us divided. You're well aware of this, yeah? Now let me ask you a question. Could you imagine if all races joined Oregon for their stand up, not stand off, against the federal government? Couldn't you just see the heads explode if there was black, white, Asian, Indian, Latino, whatever you are, all in one location for one cause? Could you imagine that? Imagine if nothing else, for a brief moment in history, we started to erase the labels. You're no longer a liberal. You're no longer a conservative, Republican, Democrat, left wing, right wing, whatever. You're just an American standing up with other Americans for the common good and the purpose of its citizens. Perhaps now is a good time to stop playing in to what the media is selling us. Maybe now it's time to let the division stop. They've been so successful. They know how to use us, man. It's psychology, and it works. We're all affected by it, including myself. Maybe now is the time to put our foot down and say, hey, no more.
All right, that was the end of that clip. I don't know why it shut off like that, but it was only about 6 seconds left in there. All right, a number of things there. See, at the end, he did admit that he is programmed too. He suffers from the programming as well. And so I guess that's what he'll blame the programming for, the biased, unfactual viewpoint he just said about the Black Lives Matter movement. And how many times do I have to say Black Lives Matter is a small organization, probably has less than 100 members. I'm talking about the 501c3. All right. But the vast majority, the tens of thousands of people that were out there that have been out in these different cities protesting, been at the Mall of America, which was primarily white people, under the BLM tag, Black Lives Matter, they don't belong to any organization or anything like that. It's just a simple statement that this system, based on the false assumption that white people are superior, devalues black lives. That's why these grand juries, despite video evidence, when a white cop kills, and it could be a black cop too, but, you know, kills a black person, that, you know, they let them go because nobody values black life. That's why, as long as it's predominantly black people in 21st century slavery and human trafficking on these prison plantations, working for the federal government, working for the state government. We talked about California in the 90s, bragged about the $150 million that they made off of prison slave labor. All right. We talked about Kamala Harris, who's black. See, we don't get caught up in those labels. And I'll talk about, I'll address labels in a minute. You know, I call them proxy racists because the system is racist because it's a primarily targeting black people. But do it target other people? Yes, it does. But black people the most. Okay, so, but, you know, you have people of all different backgrounds, racial classifications, religious classifications, who have been participating in these Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Now, he's listening to the CNN, he's listening to the lies of Fox News and whatever other Daily Caller, whoever he's listening to, saying that these were riots and there was mass loot. Was there some looting? Was there, you know, yes, there was some. There were a few individuals we saw break into a liquor store and take. We saw the video. There's no denying that. But that wasn't what the mass majority of the protesters were doing. They weren't part of Black Lives Matter. Those were criminals taking advantage of the fact that the police all mobilized against peaceful demonstrators exercising their constitutional rights. under Missouri Constitution as well as the U.S. Constitution. So all the police is focused on men, women, and children who are protesting the unjust treatment, which was, there's no denying the evidence. Even though the Justice Department didn't do a dang thing about it, they did do an investigation, made one person resign, two people resigned, but there was no criminal prosecution for all of this organized crime. There was no RICO charges against all this organized crime where you got the city manager telling the police chief, we need to raise our revenue so you know who to target. So those criminals were taking advantage of the fact that the police was all focused on unarmed men, women, and children protesting. So the criminals took that opportunity to break into a building where their building set on fire, where their car set on fire. Yes. But by who? Why do you want to put that on all the vast majority of the people who weren't engaged in any criminality at all, but was simply protesting? So he bought into, he playing the same game he trying to say others are playing. I was just put on my status the other day, and I was talking about black people. There's no way you can call yourself conscious, and you're bought into the labels of Democrat versus Republican or liberal versus conservative, because when it comes to those two parties, they're all damn crooks. They're all practicing 21st century slavery and human trafficking. We have pointed out on this program Democrats signing a bill along with black Democrats. See, because we call out everybody. We don't just focus on one group, because we know white supremacists could not do what they're doing without the help of non-white people who do it for whatever reasons, whether that's for a paycheck, whether that's for pats on the back or pats on the head or recognition or whatever, butter biscuits. We point out everybody. But I was saying, here you had the Democrats sign a bill that would allow car dealerships to continue to discriminate against black people who had the same credit scores as white people who got a better rate, but you want to give these black people predatory rates. Democrats signed that, voted for that piece of legislation. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the DNC. So you can't be conscious and tied to either of these parties. It's all a political charade. All right? Now, that's why we do what we can do to deprogram the masses in our community. It's up to you to deprogram the masses in your community. But don't point fingers at our community. Don't say we engaged in something and then you engaging in it yourself. You heard Brother Ralph call in and blast on Al Sharpton. Hey, Al Sharpton, we didn't elect Al Sharpton. He don't represent us. We have diverse views in our community. But my thing is, you can't say you conscious. You can't say you're awake to the system and be bought into the system like that. I'm not telling people not to vote, but don't vote for somebody based on their political party. So, he's wrong there. Now, let's get to labels. He won't talk about labels. Look, I've caught in all kind of hell throughout the years. That's why I got suspended off of Blog Talk Radio. Not because of anything I said. Not because of anything I did. Except that I named the name of a radio program Black Talk Radio. Why did I call it Black Talk Radio? Because that's a search word. That's a search term for black people looking for other black people who are talking about politics and social issues and spiritual things and finance and economics and all of that. And I know that's a number one search term. If you put in Black Talk Radio, not Black Talk Radio Network, put in Black Talk Radio. You'll see that blacktalkradionetwork.com is the number one search result. People search for that. That's why I named it. And then I'm looking at it from a black perspective. Now, people want to talk about, let's address these labels. Isn't American, or we're all Americans, isn't that a damn label? That's a label, right? That's a nationality. That's a label. I'm French. I'm British. I'm Moroccan. I'm Nigerian. Those are all labels. All it does is identify a subset of people. That's all it does. So why are you threatened by people calling themselves whatever they call themselves? They have a right to self-determination. You don't get to tell them what they should call themselves. Who the hell are you? Do you go to the Jewish community and say, hey, stop celebrating Jewish Heritage Months? Jewish ain't even a racial classification. It's a religious classification. You're practicing deception. Do you go to the Irish Americans, to the bars on St. Patrick Day and say, look, damn it, you're an American. You're not an Irish American. You are an American. Stop celebrating St. Patrick's Day. We're a Protestant Christian nation, not a Catholics. You ain't in Ireland. Stop drinking green beer. Stop putting four-leaf clover tattoos on your arm. Do you go to Italian Americans and tell them to stop eating spaghetti because they in America? Do you tell them to stop eating pasta or whatever Italian dish that they eating in you know, because that's part of that food is part of their culture? Are you telling them you're an American? You ain't no Italian American. Let's get rid of these labels. We don't need no specialized food or anything like that. No, it's only black people. I don't even call myself an African American. Some black people do. I don't, because I don't want that label. I don't want the label of American on me, because American is associated with the United States government that is committing mass murder, genocide, crimes, theft, all manner of evil all across the planet. I don't want to be associated with those evil people in Washington, D.C. that are corporate officers of USA, Inc., engaged in all this criminality, practicing slavery and human trafficking as prescribed by the 13th Amendment. It's only when people call themselves black or African American do we hear these white men talking about we're all Americans. Let's do away with labels. Labels ain't the problem, man. It's behavior that's the problem. It ain't what people are calling themselves that's the problem. It's the people activity that's the problem. And when they're practicing injustice, that's the problem. That's an illegitimate argument, because you ain't going to nobody with that argument. We're all just Americans, but the black community, when you want to criticize us, you're a hypocrite. So I'm going to let y'all hear from a member. Let me check the okay, everybody just hanging out listening. Again, if y'all have any questions or comments. Damn, we only got 8 minutes. So I'm going to go ahead and keep it moving. Here is a Hawaiian man who lives in Oregon. And in case y'all didn't hear the report here on Black Talk Radio Network, we especially covered it on Political Prisoner Radio, because we say every Hawaiian is a political prisoner because the United States government, which it admitted to, illegally took over the Kingdom of Hawaii, overthrowing is lawfully or legally, and you know, who cares about their laws? Like H-Rap Brown said, their laws keep you down. We're not morally or legally bound to their laws, because they practice an injustice. But you know, they overthrew the Hawaiian kingdom, kidnapped the queen, threatened to kill her and every member of the court if she didn't sign some papers, turning it over to Bob Dole's ancestor. Y'all know who Bob Dole is? Republican, ran for president a few decades ago. The Dole Food Company. Y'all know them pineapples and other food and whatnot. Yeah. One of his ancestors worked with a bunch of other white supremacists, along with some U.S. Marines, to illegally overthrow the Kingdom of Hawaii, which was recognized by every nation you know, around the world. And recently they just had a vote, were supposed to have a vote, to get their country back. Who do we hear people say that, right? Take our country back. It ain't never been your damn country. And so Hawaiians were supposed to take a vote because the United States has acknowledged that this was illegally done, that you betrayed an ally like y'all did Libya and overthrew it and took over the territory. And so they were going to vote on whether or not they wanted to stay part of the Union or reconstitute their own sovereign nation again. And you had some white men from Texas use a proxy racist Hawaiian to file a lawsuit to stop the votes, to stop the votes from being counted. That's ongoing right now. But here is a native Hawaiian who is living in Oregon. Let's hear what he has to say about what's going on in the state he's living in.
Wasawasa, good morning on this fucking beautiful day in Oregon. But yeah, never make a video a long time, but never have nothing for talk about until now. Now I have something for talk about. Look, as everybody know, I live in Oregon, yeah? And as everybody probably know now, we get this militia whole held up, man, because they saying the government corrupted, they're taking fucking land, and they, you know what I mean, a water supply and all that shit. But to me, that's fucking bullshit, you know what I mean? Especially for these guys. You know what I mean? You get people fucking back, oh yeah, they're protesting the government. So what the fuck you think natives doing, yeah? Native Americans and fucking Hawaiians or anybody that is oppressed by America when they're fighting for their land. In fact, take this one example. Hawaii right now, we're fighting for our land, okay? Our mountain, Mauna Kea. When we came for protests, we came with kupunas, old people and young people, holding hand to hand with no fucking guns, okay? And then what the government did, they came dressed up like SWAT team or like there was military for take us out, okay? Now you get this fucking dog, and we're fighting for our ancestral land, okay? Our ancestral land, okay? Now you get these donkeys from Texas up in Oregon fighting for the, they stay on federal wildlife land, okay? And they fight, they get guns, everything, okay? But you don't see them fucking rolling up. And, I mean, you don't see the fucking feds, you don't see the cops rolling up with guns on them. You know what I mean? What the fuck is going on? And then people gonna back them up. Yeah. But before you back up these fucking ranchers, eh, you better go back up the fucking native people, eh, of this land, because this is theirs before the fucking ranchers, okay? Wake the fuck up, okay, you fucking dumbass, okay? That's how I feel, because in actuality, you better go do your fucking history. Why in Oregon no more planting fucking natives? They came over here and kill them all, okay? So wake the fuck up. You no go fucking tell. But fuck these donkeys, okay? We like our land back too. You know what I mean? We fight for our land. They bring guns for us. Okay? You better believe that, and that's the truth. Okay? So either way you look at it, huh? When native people of America fighting for their fucking land, that is one true fucking patriot, okay? Because that's our land, okay? We was here first, okay? So what the fuck make you can claim them, huh? Before the fucking natives, huh? And then we will use this for example, huh? You know Donald Trump's stupid fucking saying, let's make America great again. Yeah, he right. Let's make America great again by giving back the land to the natives. Aloha and have a nice day.
So, only got 2 minutes before Tando Radio Show starts, so I'm going to share this last story with you. I don't have anything more to add. I think I've expressed myself pretty clearly on this situation in Oregon and the connected issues, the related issues. But again, while I have been reporting on this story about the Tennessee case of Tremaine Wilburn, who was charged last year with the killing of Memphis cop Sean Bolton, I do have some people I associate with that live in Memphis. Memphis, at one time, I don't know if it's still true because I don't know if they reported all the data, but they were the number one city for killing unarmed black people. All right. And I seen something about where the black cops was suing the city because they wasn't getting paid the same as the other slave catchers and whatnot. But anyway, so Mr. Wilburn pled not guilty, maintains that he was acting in self-defense, was in fear for his life. Remember, he was in a car about to do a marijuana or cannabis deal, allegedly. And so They're saying that that was his motivation. He had less than a gram of cannabis. Why would he kill a cop over less than a gram of cannabis that has been decriminalized, if I'm not mistaken? All he would have got was a fine. So why would he kill a cop over some freaking cannabis, man? You know, it don't even make sense. But here's the thing. Now you got the city council wants to name a street after this cop, who Mr. Wilburn said was manhandling him and put him in fear for his life, giving him conflicting commands where he was trying to comply and he's trying to put his hands behind his back. But this, he said that the cop kept jerking him around and all this. And he was scared for his life. He should be. He live in Memphis where they're killing black people a lot. He can look out all over the United States and see all the people, not just black people, but all the people being killed by cops. Common sense would put you in fear for your life if you got a cop acting crazy and you trying to comply. And they're jerking you around and saying stuff like, you know, stop resisting. Stop. We've seen it. We've seen videos like that. Come on. So, but the move, this is what I think this Memphis City Council is doing. They want to name a street after him to prejudice any potential jury against Mr. Wilburn. Because if they do this before he's had a trial, then they're going to have some big ceremony and they're going to be saying, oh, this was such a good cop. And, you know, we don't know how many people he murdered in Iraq, the illegal occupation of Iraq when he was a Marine, a combat Marine, because I did my research. We don't know. He might have been suffering from PTSD and got violent, you know, with Mr. Wilburn. But we're going to honor him anyway just because he was a cop. That's going to prejudice any potential jury. And I think that's exactly what the intent is. What has this man, this cop done to deserve a street named after him? Simply because he got killed? Come on. And the timing of it, Mr. Wilburn hasn't even had his trial yet. So that is the intent here. This again, how they practice deception and practice injustice. Let the man have a fair trial, as y'all call it, and an impartial jury. But that's all y'all doing is trying to poison the jury pool. Anyway, that's all the information I have on that case. I will try to find out as much as I can. I reached out to the family, you know, because I'm being objective in this. I haven't seen any evidence that he committed murder, so he's innocent until proven guilty. And he ain't even had a trial yet, and they trying to set him up. All right, recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines. It's Battlefield America out there. Indeed, the entire planet is a battlefield. And so to decrease the likelihood that you'll become a victim, you need to develop battlefield skills, battlefield awareness, codification, so that you don't become a victim, so you don't become enslaved, so you don't get shot down in the street, shot in the back 16 times while you're walking away from a cop. You know, there are certain things we can do to try to prevent these things from happening, although there is no foolproof method, because killers going to be killers. And sometimes, you know, you come across the wrong person and it's nothing you could do. You could do everything right. You could be by the book and everything, and this person is just intent on killing you or harming you or putting you into slavery. But, you know, still, you got to do everything you can to prevent those situations from happening. With that said, I'll be back on air tomorrow at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Stay tuned for Tando Radio Show. Peace and blessings to all.